the next section of our day, and that is a panel led by Mary Adams, who is a dear friend of mine and ours, I call her my spiritual sister. She has been part of the dialogue work that Thomas and I have been part of for decades. She is part of that. And she recently co-founded the Emerge Forum for Global Dialogue, which we're also quite interested and involved and engaged in. And Mary has a particular passion for women's awakening and authentic leadership, plus has worked 20 years working in women's development, and has been working on programming and writing about women's leadership and interior development. She is living in London and splits her time between the United Kingdom and India, and so she is going to be leading this panel. And the panel contains three remarkable women. The first is Nadia Manzoor. Nadia is an actor, writer, and producer. Nadia is a social change agent. She is she grew up in a Pakistani Muslim home in North London, and then moved to Singapore, to Dubai, to Boston, and now she lives in Brooklyn, New York. So she's had quite a global journey herself. And but she is an activist through her performances. Her one woman show Burk Off is a manifestation of her activist intention. And it has had sold out runs in New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, London, and Toronto. But she calls herself a cultural provocateur, and she is. Her art is how she makes people think and rethink stereotypes. Next is Yael Tridal. Yael is a dear friend and also a passionate activist to create peace in Israel, which is where she's living. She has is active in Women Wage Peace, which is an Israeli women's movement working to pressure the Israeli government to come to a peaceful agreement with the Palestinians. So she has been working very hard to promote peace and reconciliation in an area of the world that we're all very concerned with. For the past decade, she's been active in exploring subjects such as women's leadership, the role of women in political and social change, and the relationship between spiritual development and activism. And third, we have Dr. Kalpana Sampath, who is a coach, trainer, and development artiste. She's been doing that for the last 23 years. She is lives in India but travels all over the world, and also has a powerful and innovative program for education. She has an evolutionary leadership model, and works to help children develop life education skills, which in India is particularly important because of the clash of cultures and civilizations, modernity and traditional culture coming together, creating huge questions for young people growing up. And she has done a brilliant job in creating a powerful program for young people to do that. And that is like a sideline to all the business work that she does. So right now we will play our pre-recording. They couldn't get together because of time differences, and Mary's going to jump right in.
So we have such a short time. I think we'll just dive in, and we're going to be focusing on sort of two areas today. Because as we know, in our globalized landscape, women across the world, across cultures, are really stepping beyond the traditional roles and becoming forces within their own culture and also within our global context. So we're going to look very briefly today at how this is occurring in each of these three, in the context of each of these three women's cultures. So we're going to start today with a question, and that is, I'm going to address you, Kalpana, to start with. Do women in this changing world bring a specific perspective, a quality, or a focus to their contribution as leaders and innovators or activators that is different to men or not? And if so, how does this manifest? So, Kalpana, we'd love to start with you.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Elizabeth, for having me share my thoughts and views, because these are very close to my heart. One of the things that I want to share here is to first say what's the world we are in and how women are actually connecting to it, because the world by itself is changing. We have moved on into consciousness era almost over a decade. And so the world norms itself are changing because the requirements are changing. And most of the time what happens when this transition happens is there is a certain set of people who are caught into this, and women per se, the middle-aged women are caught into this. And no longer it is the survival of the fittest, but the need for higher level of wisdom, emotional balance, and a capacity to be able to be connected, not just through the head, but also through the heart. And there couldn't have been a better time than truly the women to start playing its role. And we are also seeing this very much in India, that women are certainly taking over, playing multiple roles than what they have ever played before. And the voice of the women is being heard much more than what it was. And of course, in the last two decades, whether it could be the businesses or the government, all that kind of push to look at different policy changes to include women a lot more. And it has happened more, I feel, through challenges, fights, and, organically the entire world is waking up, but at the same time, India is waking up too. Still, there is a lot of struggle for us to be, you don't find very many women in top positions, so it is still a challenge. It is still a challenge for women to be safe enough to feel they can voice what they want to say. So there is a transition that is happening. So the younger ones have much larger voice than maybe the elders are still, thinking about it. And I feel one of the most difficult things that has happened in the last two decades, which is changing now, but the most difficult thing is it all started trying to prove that she's better than the man or do everything that the man can do, which is changing now. People are waking up to say that's not the route we need to take. There is no need to be in competition. There's no need to be, that's one of the very small voices which are coming up to say we need to be first proud of who we are and bring our core competencies onto the floor. Start contributing. So it is in a very transition period, and the world itself is, waking up for a process of inquiry. And women do have been, I think it's in the day of the women to be able to care, to forgive, to love, to let go sometimes on some things and to be patient enough to wait for things to happen. And all these competencies are becoming more and more important in the world around. So therefore, I see that there is a huge, and this shift is having a lot of confusions and challenges for the society, because the entire society is not geared up. As much as the shift is happening, it is also the fear, anxiety, and confusion that is happening in the society. And a lot of institutions are being shaken up, and there's a lot of doubts on marriage, doubts on childbirth, and ability to manage career, and what is more important. All these are very important social problems today that we see, I think, more and more increasing in India.
Right. It makes sense. As you said, it's a time of a big transition. A big changes are happening for women, and women are far more involved, as you just said, and particularly in your culture, that's a very big thing. But it makes perfect sense that there's a lot of questions and a lot of confusion and tumult during that process. So we'll get back to that, but thank you, Kalpana, and I think you brought out some very core competencies there. I think you call them core competencies that you feel women bring. And, and so we'll see if there's some overlapping with the others or not. And so we'll come back to this. I'd love to pick up some of these things with you, but maybe now we will move to Yael. And Yael, you can speak a little bit about your experience of women in Israel. And then, as I said, once three of you have spoken, we'll come back to talk about a little bit together. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mary. I think a lot of what Kalpana said makes a lot of sense to me. I think what I'm going to speak now, I mean, the whole issue of women and what we can bring to our culture today is very wide. And since I'm currently focusing in the whole issue of solving the conflict or bringing an armed conflict to an end, I'll actually try and speak about what I think women can bring to this. Because I think as women, we had a very specific role in history in which we acquired some skills that I think are really lacking in a lot of the leadership around the world, and specifically I can say about this region. I'm coming from Israel, and Israel itself and the whole region, as everybody knows, is quite messy. So I was thinking, for example, about the role of women as the tribal peacemakers, the ones who are actually were trying to get everybody to be okay with everybody else, so that the balance and the peace can be maintained within the tribe or within the community. I was thinking about women's tendency to have relationships, to have, you know, to create relationships, very personal, human kind of relationship, something that was looked down at for very many years. But actually, when you think about it, it's the ability to see another person as a person, not as an ideology, not as an opponent, but as a person, and relate on that level and create some kind of connection. I think the fact that we were oppressed for so many years gives some sensitivity to people who are marginalized, to people who are in the not the hegemony, not the they're in the marginalized and so on. So everything that I say, of course, is a huge generalization, because there are men and women who have these skills everywhere. But I'm just trying to bring some skills that women gained, and I think has important role nowadays. The way to the working together, the way that women were raising the family together in the tribe, helping each other, supporting each other, to actually do it together. And I think some, I think Kalpana said love and compassion or something like that. I think there's something about that women brings, again, from being mothers, from their nature as mother educators, and so on. And I just want to briefly speak about this in relationship to the example of actually an action that we did here in Israel lately, which was I'm a member of an organization called Women Wage Peace, that its goal is to put enough pressure on the government, on the Israeli government, to do everything they can to actually create a peaceful solution here and end the occupation and the armed conflict. And what we did is for 50 days, we sat in a tent in front of the Prime Minister's house, and we fasted there. We fasted in rotation. Each day some other women fasted. But what we did, but most most importantly, what we did there is we invited people who didn't agree with us to come in the tent and make peace. And what actually we did there, we used all these skills. We used the skill of actually listening very deeply to people who think differently from us. We used the working together to maintain the tent. We used the thing of actually looking at people, even if they really opposing us, to talk to them on the most human level. On she's a mother, so let's start as talking as mothers or as sisters or as wives or as women who whatever. Start on a very human level, create some kind of connection, some kind of relationship, and from there go to ideals and ideas. I think all these actually, it was very powerful. And people who came into the tent angry, you know, really like almost aggressive and almost violent, it sometimes ended up in a hug and saying goodbye and a very, very decent talk. And I think there's something about that that is it's creating a different kind of a discourse, a kind of a win-win discourse, a kind of let's really find out what's common, where we can build something together, rather than a conflict that I win, you lose, or I'm right, you're wrong. And this is something that I think women learned over history. And it always were qualities and skills that are underappreciated. And I think actually bringing it nowadays in the public sphere, you know, in the not only at home, not only in my small community, but on a state, on a world level, can make a difference.
Right. Wow, it's powerful to hear the example that you just gave, Yael. And I think it's a very interesting point that you're bringing out here, that you both brought out. Actually, there was some definite overlap in the point you're both making. So I'm very curious. I'm very looking forward to coming back to this. So thank you very much. And now we will move to Nadia and hear from Nadia, who's in a very different situation in Brooklyn, and then we will cycle back together to discuss this major point, this core point that both of you have brought out. Thank you.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the context that you both have set has been really great, and I'd love to just give a personal example that I think really illustrates what you're both speaking to, which is, you know, having grown up myself in a Pakistani conservative family. And for me, my biggest role model in terms of what female leadership meant were limited to being a wife and mother. And then leadership from, you know, a patriarchal male perspective, the way I saw leadership was very much this repressive notion in which, you know, you both described, which is about conquering over the weaker you or beating the weakest player or being on top and getting to the way of getting on top. It's not one in which, you know, the female, like you were saying, the core competency of a female, which is about being inclusive, and it's a power to include as opposed to a power to repress and get to the top and exclude. And I've seen this in myself now being a leader in my own right and running a production company and working with women and men and big production crews all the time. Is I've seen in myself that I have this learned understanding of what it means to be a leader, which is to kind of make somebody, put somebody in their place or be on top, but actually something that's much more natural and something that I'm constantly trying to cultivate is how are we all on the same page together so that we can move forward together as a team. And something that I've become, you know, really aware of is this whole issue of power. And if we really want to move forward in culture, you know, with the missions that we have, how is it that we move together with a collective power as opposed to an individual and power that's taken and, you know, makes other people powerless in relationship to that? So that's definitely something that I struggle with on a daily basis, and I'm finding a strength actually in in a more female-oriented leadership, which comes from a collective inclusion. And I wanted to speak to another point, which was about mission, which I think Kalpana mentioned, which was, you know, because for so many years we've had a struggle for our voice to have meaning in a leadership way, or where we're having influence outside of the home, that I think a lot of the initiatives that I've seen that are coming from women are really mission-driven, are really purpose-driven. There seems to be, it's much larger than individual success and prestige. It's really about a larger mission, and that's something that, you know, has been very inspiring to me.
Right. Well, fantastic. Well, that you brought out again, Nadia. I mean, Selina brought some very interesting points there. So I'd like to just open it up and, you know, sort of, as I said, cycle back, because what I heard there that was common, that you all referred to in quite different ways, was inclusivity, a different kind of leadership. And again, I do appreciate that each of you referred to the fact that we're speaking in generalizations here. It's not exclusively female. These are not qualities that are only female, that a lot of men demonstrate this too. But it's very interesting. I think the point that you all referred to is the inclusivity, finding a common ground. And what you just brought out now, Nadia, purpose, that it's not just about individual success. So, Kalpana, would you like to follow up any of that briefly, and then Yael?
Yes. As I was listening to Yael and Nadia, there was something that was coming to my mind is to, coming from the HR and corporate background, I would also want to put the things clear when I said core competency, what the world actually is looking for in leaders and managers and CEOs, which women do have because of the decades of, whatever they have gone through in their life and how they're able to manage the families and the children and everyone. One of the important things is their ability to look for alternatives, their ability to not just give up, but to stay put when they decide. Imagine having a child for 9 months and being able to the childbirth and having the patience to wait. No, ability to deal with ego. Born with one's own decision once they take up. There's a whole lot of hard work and discipline that they bring, and with the ability to connect with the heart to others, you know. And they have the capacity to see these difficulties and troubles. And this is because of, I think, our capacity to bear children, our own connection to the future, and taking responsibility of what is good for in the future comes very much naturally, because a woman is a person who does not focus so much about her the minute she becomes a mother. The minute she becomes a mother, the future becomes more important, children become more important than what she herself undergoes or goes through. And these are all actually the capabilities needed for the future world. The world in the next maybe about next 2-3 decades is going to demand all these things as we are becoming globally expansive. So we need to have an inclusive society. And for that, I think women actually have been prepared to take over the roles of leadership. The society and the corporates do not recognize this, but the minute they start recognizing, realize that here is a well-prepared person to be able to take over the world.
Great, thank you. Yael?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say something about, because I completely agree with you, Kalpana, and I think the thing that you said about alternative perspectives, because I think actually we are in a place where the world needs something, a new perspective. And I can tell you that I heard a few times here in Israel where ex-army generals, ex-army male, you know, commanders were telling me that women will have to be involved with the peacemaking, because they say that men who were so long involved in war can't think creatively about peace. And I think this is true not only in the area of armed conflict, but as you said, Kalpana, and you know, in the area of businesses, of culture, of everything, then the perspective of women is not heard enough, and I think it has a lot to offer and a lot of alternative ways to deal with issues that are relevant for the world today.
Wow, fantastic. A lot there, and I wish we had more time to take a lot of that further, but I feel that a lot came out in that, and I really appreciate the succinctness with which each of you brought that out. And I think, Yael, what you said too about the win-win approach rather than being on top, I think you all three referred to that. It's a very different orientation and, as you said, a very different perspective. And I feel also what you all brought out was, which I think is very, very important, because we're not talking about women now becoming superior at all. What we're talking about is what do women bring because of the, as you all pointed out, the history we have as mothers, as carers, connectors, and the history we also have of oppression. I thought that point that you made, Yael, about being sensitive to marginalized groups and looking for places to bring people together is very alive in women's consciousness. It's very natural to that. And again, it's not that men don't have that, but they do bring other gifts. So having said that, and if there's time, we will come back to that, but there is a lot more to say about all of that. But I would like to, at this point, go a little bit into what in each of your situations or cultures with regard to this, and you did refer to this a little bit, Kalpana, are the challenges that women are facing in your community, culture, or in your case, Nadia, it's quite a mixture. You're spanning quite a few genres there, identity genres. So I'm curious what the challenges are, both inner challenges, the inner challenges that women face, and the outer challenges. Just speak a little bit to that in your specific community, and I think that will link to what we've just been discussing as to how you're approaching that. But it'd be good, I think, to bring them out, because there are some very common things, I think, that are challenges to women all over the world, but there are also very specific ones, I think. So again, maybe we can start with you, Yael.
With me, okay. So I just want to say, because I'm going to bring three main issues that I've been thinking of, and I'm going to talk about it very superficially. Obviously, each of these issues have complexity, and what I am going to say may sound a little bit I don't know, untrue sometimes, but I'll say it anyway. So I think in Israel, there were three forces that are very problematic for women and for gender equality. There are more, but I'll mention three. The first is the military, the whole thing that the country is at a constant state of armed conflict. The second one is religion. And the last one is the issue of the ideology on which this country was founded. So when I'm talking about the military, in the Jewish secular society, every young man and woman, when they get to be 18, has to be enlisted in the army. And that means that for 2 or 3 years or more, they're actually in a culture that officially considers men as more valuable than women. And that's a very problematic perspective, because it must damage the self-worth of young women when they're in a culture that sees male soldiers are more valuable, more contributing than female soldiers. Mm. Then the other thing is in a situation like that is that when the country is constantly at a state of armed conflict, the level of violence is very high, and it never stops in the borders. Now, when you put together violence and gender inequality, that means that there's more violence against women. Another thing is that where men in the army in the military, they can have the option to actually get have a career and be given very high level roles. That creates that paves the road for them for when they leave the army. And a lot of our politicians are ex-generals. A lot, like commanders and soldiers who had career in the army, when they go out, it's much easier for them to get jobs in businesses, public service, high jobs that have high impact. And the last thing I want to say about this issue is that when security is the most pressing issue in the country and men are considered experts on security, women become irrelevant and their perspective and experience are not valued. So that's for the issue of the armed conflict. Now, there is the issue of religion. Israel is still, I know it sounds unbelievable, but in Israel there is no separation of state and church, which means that on some issues, for example, like marriage or divorce, people can do it only through the religious authorities. And the religious authorities here, are most of them archaic, patriarchic, chauvinistic, I would say misogynistic, and it creates a problem for women, because when religion rules, usually women suffer from discrimination and even exclusion, and their voice is ignored because it is inherent in the orthodox religious thought. It's just how it is.
Right. Right.
And the last thing I want to say is about Zionism, which is the ideology upon which Israel was founded. So what I'm saying now is more relevant to the Jewish population because it affects the whole population of the country. If you look at Zionism from a gender perspective, it is a very male chauvinistic ideology. It was created in response to the persecution of Jews in Europe and the Europeans' perception of Jews and Jewish men in particular as feminine, weak, ugly, stuff like that. So that Zionism actually reacted against this image and aspired to be as masculine as possible. And when you look at it from a gender perspective, Jewish men were redefined to be the John Wayne of the East, strong, muscular, beautiful, aggressive, while women were kept very much in their traditional roles. So again, this is a huge issue. I can't even begin to talk about it, but this is something that that lies in consciousness. And the thing was that while the men's role was defined as the men who built this country, women's role was defined as the one who brings children and educators. And until now, you can see, even though we are, a lot has happened in this country, but until now, Israel considered to be what they call like a fertility empire. It's women are really encouraged to bring children. And the thing is that once they bring children, then the support stops, and then it really affects on their ability to actually be completely involved in the public sphere.
Right.
So this is just kind
of... Well, Yael?
Yeah.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to... We're unfortunately running a little bit short on time.
Okay, sorry.
It's fine. But I think we just need to move on, and then ideally, again, we can come back. But...
if there will be time for the solutions.
Yes. All right. So thank you. That was very full. So Nadia, maybe we can hear a little bit from you on this, on the challenges.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to speak to, since I'm living in Brooklyn right now, but I actually want to speak to the challenges that I faced growing up and the challenges that are really prevalent right now for British, Pakistani, Muslim women, young women. And I think one of the biggest challenges is actually in this conflict, because, you know, growing up in the secular West where so much is available, and then growing up in a community which the ideology is very much of a tribal community where family is everything, the honor of the family is everything, and the honor of the family really depends on the shoulders of the female, is a real struggle in young women defining who they are in this cultural conflict. So in terms of where their sense of morality comes from, in terms of how they're able to navigate, you know, what they wear in different circumstances or who they are as women. So on one hand, you know, in the West, we're being taught that women can be leaders and women can be teachers and women can choose to potentially not have children, whereas in the home, the limitation of what it means to be a woman is very much capped at being a wife and mother. And for me growing up, it was extremely troubling because, you know, I understood that my family, being Pakistanis, held on to their culture and their identity so deeply. And in fear of losing that, they kind of like brought me tighter into their grip. And I also, being somebody who was British and, you know, grew up in England, wanted to be like my friends and wanted to assimilate and be normal. And as a result, I started living this double life, and I had a real loss of integrity with myself, and it was very unstable. It was unstable territory that I kind of lived on. And I think that we're seeing this, it's still happening so deeply because we're not having conversations that are needed in the home because tradition and, you know, religion kind of puts a stop on the kind of conversations that we can have about sexuality or what it means to identify as a woman now in the West and what it means to be a reforming Muslim. And these conversations aren't really allowed and welcomed in traditional homes. And so I think that's really, you know, a big issue. And I think, for example, we know so much about the young British women who are going to ISIS, for example, and are leaving Britain. And I think that that's really a demonstration of this issue of identity, of needing to be defined in a way that is comfortable and stable and singular. And I think that's an issue when we are growing up in non-singular places where our host culture doesn't define our home culture. Right. And, you know, this is very much what, you know, Burkhoff is speaking to as well. So I think those are really the biggest internal struggles.
Great. Wow, thank you. And again, you know, I can tell it from what you were saying that the crossover, although very, very different situations in the role that tradition and religion plays in both you and Yael situations for the women in your cultures. So we will come back, but thank you. Thank you so much, Nadja. Kalpana, can you just briefly outline the main challenges that you feel for your culture, inner and outer, or both?
Yes, listening to both of them, I'm much more, I feel more connected to see where actually India is, because I'm going to speak about one rural and urban. There is a difference in India. That is one which is important. I'm going to start with the urban and then connect it to the rural. See, when you look at the urban, when you look at the one generation which is in the transition, important that we need to speak about is between the 20 and the 40-year-old. These are the people, the women have breadwinners for quite some time in various economic levels. Because one of the things that has been left behind after the colonization, everything in India, is education is something that is grown very much in India, which has affected the way women are being seen and the way women have taken up education very seriously. But most of the women who are between this age of 20 and 40 are in, many a time they are now in a confusion. They are in the transition space where they are at one time, they know that they need to have an identity. And I did you know, of a research which said that over 70% of the women are age of 30 are actually depressed in urban areas because they are managing their old role, earlier role of being a mother and a homemaker, as much as they are managing the role of being a career woman, searching for identity, searching for herself. And in all these things, one of the important things is she's left with very little time for herself. So the question about the emotional connect with the husband, the level at which marriage stands, and the level at which she needs to make adjustments. So there is a lot of conflict in her mind of, should I stand for something or should I not? You know, should I take a stand? Should I my thoughts? You know, she's in that kind of a space because in a corporate, she's expected to grow very fast and deliver and speak up and become a manager, whereas at home still, the women, right? Very interestingly in India, the women is an enemy of women. In fact, they are very happy with their father-in-laws, but sometimes they have a lot of difficulty with their own mother-in-laws. So why? Because the previous generation between 60 and 80, who were homemakers, who were very quiet, and they were always being shut down by the men, they don't want to see their own younger girls and daughters and daughter-in-laws really speaking up and picking up. You know, sometimes they feel very threatened. Oh my God, I didn't do it, and how is she able to do it? Why is she doing like this? Why is she changing the rules of the game? Mm. You know, why is she playing a different role? So most of the places I see the issues of marital discord or problems is the women becoming a problem to the other women. You know, they themselves are not able to accept sometimes when you are one. But the younger generation is now, because of technology penetration and things like that, are very, very different. And they are having a say in most of the things. But I'm really afraid that we are not able to appreciate our own culture. We are moving towards the West because we are adopting a culture which is not ours. Therefore, they are only adopting in the form changes, not in the essence changes. You know,
right.
The essence in the household is still the root. So the roots are going. In urban areas, there is no anchor. Earlier, there used to be a very strong anchor in family. But today, the family anchorage is not there because the middle age woman is in confusion. So what can she anchor to the younger generation? So therefore, and also the number of children has become one child or two child now, max in India. That's the rule. And therefore, sometimes it's only one girl who plays. The parents want her to be both a boy and a girl because they want her to fulfill everything that they want in their life. So the main issue in urban areas have been one, marriage as an institution is started shaking up quite a bit. Men are not able to find women to marry at all. Mostly there is a huge issue in most of the places because women are educated. They no longer want to just get into a marriage. They're asking for much more. Mm-hmm. Their voice has increased. Choice making has increased. This is all for the urban area. But in the rural area,
right.
There's a lot of aping of the urban without having to understand the consequences of it. This is even more dangerous. Because in rural area, everybody wants to get their girl child educated. That understanding is coming quite a bit because of a lot of policies, governmental thrusts and social work organizations and institutions working on it. But while they're working on it, the rural area is unable to understand the effective zone. That is what is lost in our country right now. Because we are in transition, I'm sure it will settle down. But the whole idea is the effective zone many a time is being tipped off this way or that way. So either in rural areas...
Sorry, Kalpana?
Yeah.
Could I just interrupt? What zone? I'm sorry, I just couldn't hear that.
Effective zone. They don't know what is the best effective zone, I'm saying. The effect
I see.
To which they need to either control a girl or give her freedom. We are in extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Either they gave like so much of freedom that then you don't know, the girl is confused, no identity, she doesn't know who she is. Or because of this, there is so much restriction in rural area in some communities that still women are not able to voice out or say anything. So the disparity
right. And
the width is growing quite a bit right now. That's the huge confusion
right. That
we are having. You know,
right.
We don't know
sounds
where
like-
we stand, that is the thing, yeah.
Right. No, I appreciate it. And I also appreciate that you brought up the difference in India between the rural and urban, because where there really is very different, as you said, and,
yes.
And obviously is creating very different challenges. So that was fantastic. Again, I feel, you know, appreciate the keyhole into the essence of what we're looking at here. And unfortunately, we are coming to close of time. So if there's anything that any of you would like to respond to that, and then I would like to just close with, you know, what your vision, in one line even, for your culture is. We have 5 minutes left, and just if any of you would like to pick up on any of the points, and then, as I said, speak to what the vision is you have for your culture. So go back to Yael. I know I had to cut you off, unfortunately, Yael.
That's okay. I think just one thing I want to pick up from what Nadia and Kalpana were saying is it's the issue of identity, which I think is something that for young boys and girls, there's a lot of confusion going on. And I think also in terms of everything that I said, I think there's also a very strong, some very strong young women that are coming out, and I think they're going to bring something really different to this culture, to our culture here. And maybe my vision is that really strong, you know, this women's voice will be heard here and in our neighboring countries. And I really hope that together we can make a difference here. I more than hope, I actually believe that women coming together can make a significant change here, a change in culture, which will bring to change in the insanity of this region and hopefully to a much more sane and normal life.
Fabulous. Well, thank you, Yael. That's very, it's very inspiring. And I think based on what you brought to this panel this afternoon, there's a lot going for that. And so I really appreciate what you're saying. Nadia, very briefly, like to see if there's something you want to pick up on and then close with.
Yes, I mean, I just, getting to close everything, you know, is just, you know, how I think about, like Yael was saying, in terms of our voice. So that's something that I feel is something that I also really want for my culture and for women in general, is then finding the trust and the power in their own struggle, and that in and of itself is material for change through the voice that they give it. So I think so often it's, you know, it's not about looking outside of yourself in order for you to rise to power or for you to be heard. It's about finding what it is inside yourself that kicks you, that is, you know, that keeps you awake at night, that is your internal struggle, that actually we need to hear it, and we need to be able to engage in more conversations where young women are challenging the traditions that they're raised in and challenging their family members and challenging their communities in things that don't anymore make sense to them, and actually making that important. And as Yael said, in helping other women to do that, so, you know, through Burkhoff, I have continuously encourage other women to share their stories, and it's become a conduit for other women to now share their stories and be involved in a larger dialogue.
I do, one of the things I feel to connect to what I spoke is, instead of coming from the same paradigm of the previous paradigm that we have, I feel women need to start creating their identity, creating to what is required by the world, what is needed by the world, and to be inclusive, along working along with men rather than being, you know, either you or me, you know, kind of situation, instead of that, or higher or lower situation, to look at women, and, you know, have a much more harmonious balance within them. And I feel what I can possibly think that I want to give as a vision for my rest of my life to work with women is to be the best medium possible for reflection and empowerment to develop a more humane and harmonious society. That's what I think as a woman I'm empowered to bring. And that's what women need to realize, that they are empowered to bring and be inclusive of rest of the people in the world, rather than, again, going into a fight of looking at, you know, am I better? What is my identity? Create an identity that is inclusive. You know, take everybody on. That's our best capacity. Be the best women that you can.
Okay. Be the best woman that you can.
I'm going to be the best woman I can be, and start to wrap up this two-day global online gathering. And thank you all for participating and being here, listening, conversing on the forum. It's been great to see the engagement on the forum and the connections being made. And I think that's really the big thing, is the connections that we're making here.
I think that is the main thing. I anticipated that, but it happened to a degree that maybe one cannot anticipate,
mm-hmm.
because I am so full of this real experience of human connection on a global scale with real people that we have talked in the last 2 days to, have listened to their perspective, have been able to engage with them, have to see the differences and also the non-difference. And feel the human spirit. That's maybe one way to say it. Feel the human spirit in all of us. And without getting any way romantic about that, I am touched.
Mm.
I am just touched as you get touched when you are able to speak to people where you experience, wow, they care. Wow, these are people who have depth, who have life experience. They have seen so much and they're bringing so much to the table. And you feel the richness of the human experience. And several of our guests talked about gift. And for me, being able to have this round of conversations is more than I expected, a huge gift.
Mm-hmm.
Because it enriches my awareness of who we are as one humanity in all our different forms in a very concrete way only human engagement can do.
Mm.
No book, no TV station, no documentary, as fantastic all that is, can do this very thing, direct human connection, direct dialogue. I wanted to say eye to eye because it felt like eye to eye. But it was more ear to ear.
Mm-hmm. That's maybe more intimate.
Yes.
it's interesting because, as I think I said at some point yesterday, one of the things that inspired us to do this project was an experience that we had in co-teaching and experiencing the living, having an experience of going from continent to continent and talking about the human life that has emerged from each continent, and then as a result having this sense, this palpable sense of a living organic whole that we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, you know, I felt that in speaking with Wanta Jampa Jimpa from Australia, and speaking with him and feeling the kind of ancient depth, a kind of earth depth of his presence and knowledge, and moving across, you know, to China, then to India, hearing the different music, the different spiritual realizations of unity and how that takes different form, going to Africa, Europe.
And also being confronted with the human dvaiti when Bhai Farooq told us about the experience of the Arab Spring and everything that we are aware of, also the tragedy of this, and showing that in the midst of this tragedy that happened, so much beautiful happened too, that one, at least I was not aware of, and that the way how he emphasized the encounters of the Coptic Christian people and the Copt and the Muslim in Cairo during the time, protecting each other's churches and mosques, and how this, as he's told us, changed the culture of Egypt, that something is different. And he also brought the example of the Egyptian president being able to go to Christmas in honoring of the Coptic Christian minority, which 10 years ago would be completely impossible.
Oh, it had never happened for 2,000 years. I mean, that's amazing.
Says a lot.
Yeah, but the point I wanted to make was that there's this sense of a living, organic whole of human experience, because some people are speaking about ways of living that I don't know, but yet there's a resonance with, and at the same time a kind of, as you were saying, this kind of recognition, you know, the Arab Spring. When everything happened in Tahrir Square, I remember following the Twitter feeds and, you know, being very taken and you know, reading about it, reading about what's going on in China, wondering what's going on in China, but being able to have a sense of both the deep shared humanity and the complex conflicts that are happening at the same time, have news take a different form, you know, that it doesn't, I know now when I read the paper, it's going to feel different because I've had these encounters, you know, or these encounters have happened. And to then move around to the Western Hemisphere and really have this kind of multidimensional, from Europe, having this multidimensional conflict, or not conflict, confrontation, which is part of what we wanted to do, between modernity, you know, I mean, Raul Quinones Rizzato saying Puerto Rico, where he's from, is a place where this modern kind of clash really first happened between the Spanish, the indigenous people of the Caribbean islands, and then the African slaves. It's like, you know, it happened there on that ground. So you get the importance of place in terms of history, in terms of access to different dimensions of our humanity, and you get and there's I think what you said, this care, you know, the extraordinary care that people were expressing and realizing that we're all in this together. We care about the outcome in a way that was very, very moving.
And on that note also, just we had a kitchen conversation just before. It's an interesting mood. I want to continue this. It's really such a privilege to be able to have this intimate while public dialogues with people from so many contexts. There's something very intriguing to do this as a cultural practice. I really see this as a cultural practice that is able to transform us in our understanding of our humanity. And we even talked how we can continue this and have something like a global dialogue every month with people from different continents about a different angle of the world affairs in which we are. I'm sure we will do something about it. I think we have to use technology in order to come together.
In order to kind of defeat the homogenizing effect of technology.
Yeah.
In order to create the living diversity and palpable humanity, to bring that together.
And also, it's interesting, on one hand, I feel more connected globally, but I also feel more my Austrian identity at the same time.
I think that's important, and I think that's an important aspect to look into and cultivate, because we want to be aware of, you know, and people said it over and over again, you have to be rooted in place in order to really take part in this conversation. And that means looking at the assumptions that we hold.
That's really one contribution that came from quite some of our speakers. And again, I remember Rajan Venkatesh bringing it in and saying, in order to have the capacity for globalization, you have to be rooted in your place, in your tradition. Because if you're not rooted, you cannot hold anything. I think this is something that we also have to learn, because we have to be able to hold globalization on a human level, we cannot do this if we are unrooted.
Right. And I think that we want to start talking about next steps. And one thing we're going to ask all of the participants, and by that I mean those of you who are listening, about this monthly global call. I mean, yeah. What do you think? And just to say also that we're a small group here in Frankfurt, and if there's a donation button at the bottom of the web stream page, if you are moved and you want to make a contribution, we'd sure appreciate it.
All what we did here was completely just work of our love, out of love, labor of love.
Yeah.
So any kind of contribution we really appreciate. But also if you feel motivated to help, we don't have a help button down there, but you can write us.
At info@oneworldanddialogue.com.
And we appreciate also people who say, hey, I want to be part of this. I want to do whatever. Let's talk about what we can do together to have this conversation on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, and we're also want to get Thomas and I, and as we mentioned, that a couple of our speakers and one that we're about to bring on, Diane Musho-Hamilton, are putting together a course because we want to teach what are the skills that one needs in order to do this. And I think it's to really be rooted in oneself, to be able to speak with authenticity about the unity that we are as human beings, to have the knowledge of what's going on, of our history.
To hold oneself in a dialogue, but also to hold the container of the dialogue. There's a skill to really be able to allow a dialogue to be a dialogue that is not falling apart, and one has to be part of a realization that consciousness is something that is alive between us.
Yeah, so I want to bring on Diane Musho-Hamilton, who is a person that we go to for conflicts that we have.
That's
she is, and I don't mean between each other. That hasn't happened yet. She's an internationally recognized mediator and facilitator.
But if we would have, we would too.
I know we would. Diane, you're the first person we would call. She's an author, and she is an authentic spiritual teacher in a lineage. She's been a practitioner of meditation for more than 30 years, and is a Zen monk. And she's the author of Everything is Workable, A Zen Approach to Conflict Resolution. So, Diane, welcome. We wanted to end our time together by talking about some of the skills that are required to hold this kind of conflict, celebration, dialogue together that we've been doing. What are some of the skills that it takes to hold this? To make this happen.
So, hello, Diane.
And hello.
Hi, Thomas. Hi, Elizabeth. Hey. Great to hear both of your voices.
Great to hear you.
Great to hear you.
Congratulating. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
I think your vision to extend and to use, you know, this miracle of technology to all these different places and bring all these perspectives and ways of being into one virtual space is really needs to be commended. So, congratulations. It's a wonderful thing, and I do hope it continues.
I have no doubt about that. I'm so excited about this. This is something that really is so soul-nurturing to do this.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of, you know, the developing capacity for dialogue, I think it's important, and maybe as we're just concluding and thanking everybody who's listening, first of all, to acknowledge that something in your awareness brought you to tune in.
Right.
So there's something in your intention or something in an aspiration that you have, that this is a capacity or an interest or something that's grabbing you. And just to really notice that that's kind of number one. is that there's an aspiration, and it may not even be that conscious, but something is bringing you to want to experience more, more than where you are right now. And we always like to say, you know, in certain evolutionary circles that, you know, quarks kind of reach out and see other quarks, and they cluster together, and then they form atoms. And then atoms will reach out and form molecules. Mm. So in the same way, there is something in us that moves us towards something bigger, and when we reach out and follow that, we find ourselves kind of inhabiting a new place. So that would be the first thing, just to notice your aspiration, I think.
Right.
No, I think it's extraordinary that people were moved to be part of this, and I feel very honored that is the case.
Yeah, and sometimes it's beyond us. You know, we don't even know why we're moved, but we are. And if we can just recognize that and honor it, that's just this kind of mystery of how we're changing, you know, that the world is changing and we're part of that change. And, you know, you talked about the rootedness and the quality of our presence and the kind of acknowledging both what we bring and then the limits of who we are. So I think I want to acknowledge everybody who's joined in, wherever you are in the world, for being willing to participate in English. Because
yes.
For some people, right?
Yes.
Everybody here, so many people, it's not your mother tongue, and yet you're willing to set aside some difference for a moment to join into some quality of sameness. And so that kind of presencing of who we each are, and then realizing we bring something, and there's something that we also give up when we come into a dialogue, and just noticing what are those things, what can I bring, and what am I going to let go of for a few minutes, and particularly when it's your own language, that's a massive give as far as I'm concerned. So that's something.
And also that language is language. I mean, the first person we spoke to, Wanta Jampachimpa, he said the earth created us, or created. What did he say? No. He said the earth. The earth created the. It was. It came from the language.
The sounds of the land taught us our
languages.
No, our songs.
The words and then the songs. But our languages are rooted in our place, and they convey different realities. We've had this conversation with our Indian friends a great deal, that the subtlety with which the Indian language can talk about being is not in English.
Mm.
So the fact that people are all trying to speak this motley hybrid of English is together is really, I'm grateful that everyone's willing to do that and give up their rootedness in their own language.
And at the same time, one has to say, we have to be grateful to have a language that we all can meet in.
Totally, absolutely. What an innovation that there is one language, at least in this program, that for a period of time we can tap into, so that we can exchange in a particular way.
Yeah.
That kind of wasn't true 150 years ago.
Right.
And that's the remarkable thing. And when we talk about dialogue, I would really like for our listeners to understand that it is an evolutionary trajectory, and that using a developmental model for dialogue is actually extremely important. And the way that I came to be interested and actually met both Tom and Elizabeth is through my connection with Ken Wilber. And the way that I came to work with Ken Wilber is that I worked as a mediator. I did lots of conversations and dialogues, particularly related to race, prejudice reduction, cultural competency, religion, kind of difficult dialogues about difference. And I started to see that people had different capacities.
Mm-hmm.
That when I was in those, and the capacity seemed to be in lots of domains. One was just the simple ability to take perspective. Some people really literally had a hard time standing for their own perspective because they felt marginalized, or they felt they hadn't been heard. They literally didn't didn't have the skill set to speak out in the group because they'd never been given the right conditions to be able to advocate and stand up for themselves. Other people could stand up for themselves, but they couldn't listen to the next person. Other people were really good listeners in relationship, but they couldn't really take an objective perspective or think about what the law would do or think about policy. You know, they sort of demanded to be in a kind of place in which, you know, policy or law or some ideal wasn't able to come into the conversation. And then you would have people that were, man, they were just extremely capable of taking perspectives. And I really started to think in terms of capacity and learned that our ability to take multiple perspectives, to actually listen, even if you don't agree, to listen to another point of view, is almost like a yogic accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it requires that when there are two truths, if you have a truth, Elizabeth, I have one, already there's tension in the body because we like oneness, we like sameness. So as soon as there's a kind of two-ness, the body literally starts to feel tension. If we introduce a third perspective, that's even more difficult. And so realizing that the capacity for taking perspectives does evolve and change, and we get better and better and better at it, but we don't really know what prompts the shift in the first place.
Mm.
That's something to keep in mind. I'll stop there for just a minute.
Mm. Well, that's great. That's great. And actually, that the capacity to hold, the capacity to hold multiple perspectives, and that doesn't mean within oneself, although it can, but even to be able to hear and to hold that there are multiple ways of seeing something requires a kind of a bigger container in oneself, a bigger depth in oneself.
And it creates a bigger container, because I'm still with what you said in the beginning, Diane, that a dialogue has a trajectory. Because holding these different perspectives that you are describing, and this is part of my experience of this 2 days, there's a trajectory that leads you directly in more complexity. As long as you engage in the dialogue and you stay with the other perspectives and you embrace them, something is emerging between us that allows more complexity to become part of what we're together in. And
precisely.
And to allow to do this in a way where it's also not just you have your perspective, I have my perspective, and she has his and has her perspective, and he has his perspective, but to allow that this is something where something emerges that we are also together in together, holds also this pole that really was one guiding star for this conversation, the pole between unity and diversity together.
Yeah. Right, holding that tension as
holding
both.
That tension that there is unity and there is diversity, and although they are kind of opposite, they are also together.
And they have to be. And they have to be.
That's right. That's right. I'll talk a little bit about that from just an embodied perspective in just a minute, but a little something to consider if you're listening about perspective. So I noticed, for instance, that here in the States, that there's been a little bit of news coverage about Germany's, not a little bit, actually quite a consistent news coverage about Germany's relationship to the influx of refugees, mainly from the Middle East.
Right.
And that there's been a change in policy, and it went kind of highly unnoticed that Germany said that you don't have to be processed in the country where you arrive. You can actually come to Germany without that.
Yeah. It's a
and
big deal.
That's radical.
Yeah.
And that what I heard is that in some of the refugee camps, there are actually pictures of Angela Merkel, and they're calling her Mother Angela or Mother Merkel, because
right.
they feel so grateful for this capacity
incredible.
To move from, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And from over here in the States, you know, I'm like, yes, I mean, how incredible. And I felt so much gratitude on life force. And then in terms of perspectives, I thought for a moment, okay, so there's this expansiveness and welcoming. All right, and then there are these photographs coming in from Hungary where there's all this struggle going along in the borders, and I noticed myself how aligned I was to the openness and how much I wanted the United States to reflect that. And then I thought to myself, okay, now let me pick up for just a moment the position of Hungary. Let me pick up the position of people in the United States who are afraid of, you know, just immigration, that it's threatening to my lifestyle. I don't know how we're going to pay for people. I'm not sure how everyone's going to make a living. Maybe they're going to take my jobs. And I have to just pause and say, okay, now what's the truth in that perspective? Can I allow that to be on the table? It's so natural to find one point of view, and to the one that I'm most, that I find most resonance with. It's most true for me. That's what I want. And then to do the exercise of, okay, now what is that other point of view? What is the truth in that? Can I create space for some wisdom in that perspective to actually emerge? You know, is there something we need to understand about the impact of this large numbers of people on culture? Are there any expectations that we can create if we do find ourselves in a position of being able to accept the influx? And then all of a sudden that complexity that Elizabeth is referring to, when you can get these multiple positions on the table, and there may be one that's more expanded, but what is the resistance to the perspective offer? Resistance is always necessary for change.
Mm-hmm.
There's no catalyst without something to push against.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how do each of these points of view, can they all be held in my consciousness?
Mm.
I have my preference and I have what I'm going to work for politically, but if I'm in dialogue, can I work with my body in such a way and with my mind to find a place to presence each point of view?
Right.
So that's an example that came up for me today.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And I think we need to wrap up here. And thank you, Diane, for joining us here at the end. And
also joining us not only for the end.
For the course that we're going to be doing. And I think people got a sense of the kind of skill and the skill and depth that you bring to an understanding of how we work with different perspectives.
Yeah.
And I hope people are inspired by that. I am.
Great.
And great. So then let's, the three of us can thank the participants, people who have been with us listening, caring, who are here because they care. And we just want to say, thank you very, very much for being with us. It's been such a privilege and honor to be able to do this together.
Yeah. Thank you also for our team that was helping us out and allowing us to make this happen the last 2 days, and we'll be working behind the scenes here, our technician and our people who are kind of preparing also our speakers. It was quite an adventure together.
Yes.
But in a successful one. And
thank you to Miroslav Grosser for the music. Also to James Redenbaugh for the website. And
exactly.
John Cardone for all of his help with outreach. We thank everyone who has given so much beyond the call of duty in order to make this happen. And for all of you who have gone beyond the call of duty to be here with us for 2 days, that's amazing also.
Yeah. So we definitely will continue this. We will write you about our course. Diane will be part of this, and I'm also very much looking forward, because your experience with mediation is such a necessary skill set for the dialogue that we need globally, and to have this as part of what we really can talk about will be very enriching.
So
thank you so much for your vision. Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
And goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everyone.